I've got some money, and they'll be happy. But hey, our treasurer won't be. So, bro, I want to talk tonight. We're coming to the finish, nearly at the end of the Book of James, our whistle top tour through the Book of James, and we're going to talk about patience in hardship. Does anyone like patience here? Does anyone think they're patient? Ooh, I see that. You know, as we come out of the pandemic, as we get to grips with Brexit, we get to grips with Brexit and the deal that we have, and also with the pandemic and the containers being all over the world and the lorry shortage of lorry drivers. We've had to learn to be patient recently, haven't we? You know, when I do my food shopping, I'm finding that some of the foods that I want to buy, they're just not in the shops when I want them. Is anyone else finding that? You go in there and your stuff you want, it's there, or you wait for something. Do you remember the days when you had to wait a week for something to arrive? We've got so used to everything arriving the following day that it's getting a bit annoying. I'm like, what? I have to wait. I had to order some Lego this week. And they said it was going to arrive in 2 days. It's a week. It's going to take. And me and my daughter are like, a week? What's going on? And patience. It's one of those things we're seeing all over the internet at the moment. When you want to order something, you're seeing something that says this, these famous words now, currently out of stock. If you go to the supermarket, you see little things, currently out of stock. And you know, we're having to learn patience. I know for some of us, like, we're learning patience as a superficial things, whether I get my Lego on time or whether I can get my feta cheese, which I seem to struggle to get at the moment. But some of us, actually, we can feel impatient about things. You know, some of you are feeling really impatient because your medical list is just still so long and it feels like you're never going to get seen by the doctor. Some of you, you feel like your patience is really getting worn when you're waiting for a family situation to sort itself out with. And it just seems to drag on. There's so many different things that we need patience for, isn't there? There's so many different things that actually affect us. And the reality is that a lot of the times we suffer in life, we go through, most people in our lives, we will go through periods that we will suffer. There will be periods in our life when we will get impatient because we want God to move quicker. We want the doctors to move quicker. We want everything to move quicker. And we sit there and we suffer. Ever since men and women rebelled against God in Genesis, Adam and Eve, it's been part of the story. Nobody likes suffering, but suffering is just part of human story. It's part of the woven into all of our stories. And for some people, it's evident. And for some people, it's not evident. And today's passage, James, I spoke about it a few weeks ago. But James is talking about suffering. He's talking about patience in suffering. And he speaks in very general terms tonight. So today's sermon is not about whether you've been through suffering as in your body is suffering. It could be anything else. It could be suffering at work. It could be suffering persecution. It could be suffering family problems. But let's get into it. Let's get to look what James has to say. So if you're following in your Bible, it's James chapter 5, not James chapter 4. Okay, my mistake here. I once made the joke at a church. I said, you always be careful that you know what you read the Bible, so you know that the preacher's speaking it correctly. And I had a PowerPoint notes behind me. And this guy came up to me at the end. He went, challenge accepted. I said, what do you mean? He said, these are all the mistakes that you made during your sermon. I thought, you tow rag, get behind me, Satan. I saw him this morning, actually, somewhere. It's quite amusing. You can work out which church it was. Okay, so James chapter 5, verses 7 to 12. It says this. Be patient then, brothers and sisters, until the Lord's coming. See how the farmer waits for the land to yield its valuable crop, patiently waiting for the autumn and spring rains. You too be patient and stand firm because the Lord is coming near. Don't grumble against one another, brothers and sisters, or you will be judged. The judge is standing at the door. Brothers and sisters, as an example of patience in the face of suffering, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. As you know, we count as blessed those who have persevered. You have heard of Job's perseverance and have seen what the Lord finally brought about. The Lord is full of compassion and mercy. I love the way James starts off this part of the letter. So he's moved on. Those of you a couple of weeks ago spoke about it. He moves on from the fighting that was going on inside the church. And he then moves on to patience. It reminds me of sort of dinner time in our house. You know, in our house, we're always telling our kids, be patient, be patient, be patient. And he starts off by saying this, be patient until Jesus returns. And he very quickly moves on to say this, be patient in suffering. You know, the early readers in this church, the early readers who would have read this letter, they would have felt impatient, would have had impatience in their life. They would have been really frustrated. We talked about persecution earlier, and Kathleen shared so beautifully there. But then they were faced persecution. When you became a Christian, in the times when this letter was written, it wasn't like your family might be a little bit upset that you're a Christian. You could lose your livelihood. You could lose your life. It was tough. You could be thrown to lions under the Romans. There was also political corruption. So they were suffering because the political situation was really bad. It was fixed for Roman citizens. And if you weren't a Roman citizen, which a lot of these Christians weren't, you had no rights. So they were suffering under that. Then they didn't have the NHS. You know, if they had a medical problem, what do they do? Their only option was really God. Then they didn't have human rights either under the Roman governors. And I tell you what, they would be praying, Jesus, come back quickly. Jesus, come back quickly. You know, we don't fully know what suffering they were facing, and James doesn't specify. And in the Greek, the word for suffering, it's a really general term. I can't pronounce a Greek today, okay? My only good Greek word is kebab. Okay, apart from that, I'm rubbish at everything else. So, but the word that he uses, it's all about general suffering they're going through. And I think James has been really intentional here. I think James doesn't talk about one type of suffering because James wants this to apply to any suffering that we're going through. And it's really interesting because James gives some practical advice here. Do you know what James doesn't do? James doesn't say to the Christians who are going through problems, he doesn't say to them, everything's going to be all right, love. Don't worry about it. He doesn't give them false promises. Instead, he gives them some really, really practical advice. And can I just start off by saying this? Start off and be preaching a little bit now. There's a tendency for us as Pentecostals to give hopeful words to people, not truthful words. You know, when someone's dying of cancer and they're right at the end, and you say to them, oh, don't worry about it. No, you're still going to be fine. And when sometimes it's their time to go to be with Jesus. Sometimes we've got to be really practical when people are suffering. You know, I find it really hard when we have guys and they're separated from their families and they're waiting for the Home Office answer. And you got some people saying, it's going to be all right. You're going to hear an answer next week. And I'm like looking at the Home Office going, blink your neck. That's going to break them. And sometimes you've just, instead of giving that false word, the optimistic word, we need to be practical and encouraging people. And James is really, really, really practical. He starts off by saying this, be patient. And this is number one, three practical things James does. The first thing he says to people who are suffering is this. He says, be patient. Can we say that together? Be patient. I'll tell you what, if my wife says to me, be patient, I'm not very patient back with her. Okay. It's not one of those words you want to hear, is it? But James doesn't really care about what you want to hear. He tells you what you need to hear. Not just be patient about when Jesus returns, but be patient in your sufferings while you wait. Now, it's frustrating however long it takes. You know, let's be real. As I shared that, we don't want to hear those words. I'm sure Michelle didn't want to hear those words. Would you, Michelle? Be patient when she went through her treatment. When you're frustrated because you're trying to sort your house out, you don't want to hear the words, be patient. When you're frustrated because your visa can't get sorted out, you don't want to be someone saying to you, be patient. When your family's messed up, if someone says to you, be patient, you're like, what? I've waited so long. But guys, patience is really important. Because when we're patient, We allow God to do what he's going to do. And we don't force something. Because you guys know, I don't talk about running much, do I? But if you look at my Facebook, okay, or anything about me, I love talking about running. And I've got to the stage, and I've shared this before. My daughter's like, Dad, don't wear those shorts. I'm like, why? She goes, I can see your boxers and they're pink. And I've got to the stage now that I go and drop my kid daughter off in my running gear. And she gets really embarrassed that she runs away from me. It's quite good to get her to exercise. I've already threatened her if she misbehaves when she's 13, I'm going to turn up in really, really tight running shorts to pick her up from school. She's not happy about that. But as a result of me always wearing running gear in the school, the parents come and talk to me about running. Like, there's a few dads who like running, and we in the queue, we talk. And there's one granddad speaking to me the other day, and he said this to me. He said, yeah, I've got a calf injury. He said, the problem is I keep running on this calf injury, and I've pushed it too far that I've actually made it worse. And when we're suffering, when we're impatient, we sometimes push doors that shouldn't be pushed, and we can make our situation worse. Sometimes we need to be patient and trust God, that God knows what he's doing. It's really hard to do. But guys, in the same way that a runner might want to go out running where they got an injury, all they're going to do is make things worse. Sometimes you've just got to wait it out. You've got to wait it out. And when James talks about this, James talks about rain. And now for us, we don't really have much to do with rain, because we're not really farmers here. Then anyone's a farmer. But for these guys, they had two lots of rain. First rain would come in October, November. The second lot of rain for harvest was March and April. Now the rest of the time in Israel, it was pretty dry, okay? And across the Middle East where this was written to. And there was nothing the farmers could do to make the rains come any quicker. They had to plant their seeds, and they had to be patient. Guys, sometimes we just need to be patient. Can we say that together? Be patient. The next thing James encourages them to do is this, is to stand firm. Can we say that together? Stand firm. Okay, we can read this, but it needs to reinforce it in ourselves. Now, Jesus goes on, as well as saying patience, something which you're not very good at, he also says stand firm. But he doesn't stop there. He says stand firm because the Lord is near. Can we say that together? Stand firm because the Lord is near. Guys, that's really important. You know, sometimes when we're going through struggles, when we're going through pain, when we're suffering, when things are against us, it can feel that God is a million miles away. But God is not absent in our suffering. He's actually near us in our suffering. We may not realize this, but he's there. But guys, we need to stand firm in God. The reason I want to encourage us to stand firm in God is this, because if we don't stand firm in God, if we're not patient, we'll start looking for answers in the wrong places. James here says this, when things are going against you, stand firm. Don't give up. Don't be shaken. Stand firm in God, because you might feel like he's far away, but he's not moving. He's with you. He's working in your life. I love how James phrases it here. He says, because the Lord is coming near. The Lord is coming near. Not the Lord might come near, but the Lord is working. He's active. It's now. God is coming. He's working. He's moving. But to stand firm, you need to be rooted in God. You need to be rooted in God's word. You need to be rooted in a relationship with him, not just when things are going badly. My biggest pet hate, I was going to use a naughty word there. Okay, my biggest pet hate as a pastor is this. Is when things are going really, really badly, people are in church on their knees. As soon as it goes well, bye-bye. Isn't that true? How many Christians do we know? Some of us might be guilty of it ourselves sometimes. But it's one of my irritations when I used to laugh about prayer times. Sometimes when you just got a prayer time by itself, when people are struggling, they're there, Jesus, please, please do something. As soon as God answers their prayer, they've disappeared. I wonder if God just wants them to be a little bit close and doesn't answer their prayers as quickly sometimes. Guys, you know what? It's not just for a tree to grow. A tree needs to be rooted in God, in the ground during the summer, the spring, the autumn, the winter. I know I've got them in the wrong order, but okay, but in every season, not just in the summer. Guys, I've learned as a Christian and as a pastor over the years that sometimes my job is not to solve everyone's problems, but it's to say to them, stand firm, and to stand with them, and just to stand with them as they wait. The final thing that James encourages us, and I'm going to hit a little bit more about Job, is this. He says to do the hardest thing. Don't grumble. Can we say that together? Don't grumble. Do you want to say that to the person next to you? Don't grumble. Yeah, you can say it to your spouse and might get a slap. Okay, there we go. This is a really strange thing, isn't it, to say in the middle of this. I love how practical the Bible is, okay? We think of the Bible as a spiritual book. It is a spiritual book, but it's so gritty and practical. A little strange to put in here, but I don't know how your house works, but in the low household, when something goes wrong, we blame each other. Well, actually, what happens is me, Bethany, and Sophia blame each other, but Naomi's quite good at taking responsibility. But we'll say this in our fact, when things go wrong, when you stub your toe, it'll be like, why did you leave that there? Or why did you make me do this? Or if the kids, if someone falls over and hurts themselves, they will think of a reason to blame their sister. Okay, straight away. And they're always grumbling about someone. You know, if we loot, we grumble. Excuses, we grumble, we grumble, we grumble. I don't know how people live by themselves, cope. You know, in my house, when I suffer because I've lost my socks, I always have to blame somebody, okay? If you live by yourself, you've got no one to grumble to. I don't know how you cope. And James says here, though, that when you're suffering, don't grumble about other people. Don't blame other people. You know, sometimes we can blame others for our problems. It'll be all right. If only my mother had done this 25 years ago, I wouldn't be in this position today. If only that person hadn't done this, I'd be okay. If only that hadn't happened, if only the pastor had prayed for me, I would be okay now. I didn't know those excuses we give. And we can grumble and grumble and grumble. But James says, don't. Because we're called to be different as Christians. Reality is being in a place of suffering is not easy. We can get impatient. We can want to give up. We can get vicious with people. But that doesn't help those who are around us. James challenges us to live differently. Like the rest of his letter, he pushes us as Christians to have a different standard. He pushes us as Christians to live a different way. And actually, if I'm honest with you, the challenge that he gives us is really hard. I like to grumble when things are going badly. I love doing it. But James says, no. I get impatient. But James says, no. I lose trust in God sometimes when things don't turn around. And James says, don't stand firm. He says, you called to live differently. And as Paul says in 2 Corinthians 12, verse 9, he says this, my grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in his weakness. You know, as Christians, we are not excluded from suffering. The idea that God should make our life perfect and remove all hardship is actually a really Western idea. The idea that you shouldn't have any problem in your body. Do you know where that's come from? That's come from the televangelists who want you to give them some money, okay, so that you sort of celebrate it. The rest of the world throughout the whole last 2,000 years of Christianity, that hasn't been our theology. The reality is, Jesus doesn't promise that we won't suffer, but he promises to be with us. And he says, be patient. He says, stand firm. He says, don't grumble because I am near. I've sat through so many people who through their suffering, God has done incredible things. I think about Michelle, even the testimony tonight, and the miracle that God did through her suffering. You know, God hasn't always healed, done things the way they want, but often he's been working through their life, supporting them. And James points to the Old Testament prophets as an example of this. And he says, look at the prophets in the Old Testament. We have Isaiah, not Isaiah, even Jeremiah, who God used through the suffering of seeing his country ravished by the Babylonians. We see Daniel suffer at the hands of different leaders for his faith, but he didn't moan. He just continued. Jeremiah moaned, okay, but Daniel didn't. We see Elijah suffering from depression and wanting to die after doing service for God. After he ranted at God, he got up and he continued. We see Moses suffering with the pressures of leadership and saying, God, I don't know how to do this. And that sometimes Moses actually said, God, just please take me up now. But then we have Job, who James quotes here. And Job was a successful guy. I don't know if you guys know the story of Job, but everything was going really well for Job. And he was a God-fearing man. Everything was brilliant. And the story goes that Satan comes up to God and says, well, God, Job's only your mate because you're doing nice things for him. And he said, I want to test him. And God says, go on, then you can test him, but you can't kill him. It's a paraphrase. So Job then loses everything. He suffers. He loses his family. He loses his business. He loses everything. His friends abandon him. Everything goes badly for him. But through most of the story, and we concentrate on the end, but for majority of the story, Job doesn't actually moan. He keeps his trust in God until the end, where he has a little bit of a blip, and we'll forgive him for that. In the midst of bereavement, he was patient and he trusted God and he didn't grumble. In the midst of financial pressure, Job was patient. He trusted God. He didn't grumble. In the midst of others speaking badly to him and about him, Job was patient and he didn't grumble. In the midst of pain and illness, he was patient. He trusted God and he didn't grumble. You know, Job's faith wasn't superficial. Job's faith wasn't about what he could get. Job's faith was rooted in love and respect for God that meant that he trusted God. Even when things didn't make sense, even when his world was falling apart, Job trusted God. I'm coming into land. You can breathe. Because the reality is in life, there is suffering. Let's be real. There's suffering in life. Things will go the way that we don't want. I don't think we're going to fully understand it, this side of heaven. And I think when we get to heaven, we're going to be so overjoyed at being in heaven and the new earth that we're not going to care. But that's a different theology. But in those times of suffering, whatever you're going through, we need to trust God. We need to be patient. We need to support each other in this. Because as we go back to the start of the message that I shared, James mentioned that Jesus is coming back. And suffering and pain that we go through now is only temporary. Can we say that together? Our pain is only temporary. Our pain is only temporary. In the grand scheme of things of eternity, it is only a little blip, okay? You know those times when you stub your toe and you think it's the worst pain in the world and it's going to last forever? Or, you know, we get a cold. You know, those of us have got colds again after not having colds for 2 years. If you're a bloke, you feel like you're dying. Okay, it's a medical condition. Do you know that actually proved that men feel the cold worse than women? So you need sympathy. Okay, but in those moments, it feels like forever. But it's only a blip in the line with eternity. And this is what it says in Revelation 21, verses 1 to 4. Then I saw, this is John having the vision from Jesus. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride, beautifully dressed for a husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, look, God's dwelling place is now among the people. He will dwell with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and will be their God. This is my favorite bit. Verse 4. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death, or mourning, or crying, or pain, for the old order of things have passed away. Guys, for the early Christians, it wasn't about living a life of having a Bentley and a massive great mansion and a perfect healthcare. It wasn't about that. For them, it was being patient. It was standing firm. And it wasn't grumbling. It was waiting for this new eternity, this new hope that Jesus had promised them. Guys, you might be going through hell right now. I don't know what you guys are all going through. You might be coming here tonight and you might be, Jim, you don't know what sort of week I've had. But guys, I want to say this to you. Be patient. Stand firm. Don't grumble. Because God is drawing close to you. There is hope in the end. Let's stand together.